So, welcome to this evening. Can you hear me okay? Okay, wow. So first of all, I have a piece of paper here, which I'm going to show again towards the end of the talk. And it says CE credits. So I don't forget and you don't forget. And then I would just like to address, there was a question about how to listen to a Dhamma talk. And, I mean, there's no real rule, I would say, not as far as I know. But I can tell you what I do and why I do what I do is when I'm on a retreat, I listen, and you might have seen it, usually either with closed eyes or not making contact. So I keep my own space and try to listen to what is being said and see if some of it resonates. Because usually when someone gives a talk, there will be some parts, you know, because we are at a certain time in our life or in our practice, you know, where something will really resonate, you know, and to allow that in. And if you're taking notes, I mean, it's not forbidden to take notes, you know, but I maybe also would like to remind you, you know, that all the talks will be available afterwards. So there is a possibility to listen to that again. But, I mean, there's no rule against, you know, taking notes. When I'm on a study retreat, I will take notes, of course. You know, that makes sense because usually there will be things that will be discussed. So really it's up to you. But, you know, I think it's a nice practice to kind of see what, you know, what is being said and see what resonates, you know, see what sinks in, you know. And sometimes that is not much and sometimes that's a lot. It's very different. And always the invitation was from my side to take with you, you know, what is good for you and leave aside what is difficult or not useful. You know, take that which really is important or feels important to you. So. So Akin Chano yesterday said he's going to continue with the topic that Yuka has started. And then I thought, how does my talk fit into this kind of whole week? And then he said something about bad news. And then I thought, okay, I think I've got some good news. So really, I hope in the talk there is some good news. Oh dear. And again, take with you what feels good or what leaves an impression and put the rest aside. So I'd like to start to read a poem by a Canadian poet, Christopher Wallace, and the poem is called Authenticity. Just be real, friend. Be who you are and where you are at. That's enough, and it's the only way forward. Most of us have put on enough masks in our lifetime to have completely forgotten our original face. We've become far too clad with heavy coats of expectation, suffocating under the weight of the ways we think we ought to be. You can drop that garb. There's always mystery at the naked core of who you really are, and that's just fine. It's not that we must rediscover some definable self and hand that image over for validation. Rather, those solid definitions we cart around with us are heavy enough as it is, but we've continued pushing them despite the distress. We've gotten so used to that awkward play of needing to be somebody, as if that somebody were other than who we already are. We've forgotten how to let go with all the spontaneity of a flower's growth, forgotten the beauty of our own personal bloom. That we are a fluid sweep of light and dark. That our faces, like the moons, wax and wane. You don't have to be any which way, other than the way you are. That sort of self-acceptance is the innate flourish, is the fluid self-cycle, is the way back into life. Don't fool yourself into believing there is a better disguise. Strip down to the bare beauty of your authentic state in this moment and move from there. So I'd like to talk about authenticity, but in a Buddhist context. And this context is called truthfulness, satya, which is a parami. And a parami is a perfection. And I'm going to say a little bit more about both of the terms. But authenticity has become such a buzzword to a certain degree. And I'm actually not quite sure. I mean, to a certain degree, I'm feeling quite compelled by it, and I feel it's something important. And on the other hand, and it is used in so many ways and so often, and maybe also sometimes with misunderstandings, you know, that I'm not quite sure. It's a bit of a fluffy term, you know. So what is really authenticity? So I tried to explore that, and it could actually be explored in many different ways. This could also have been a talk about self-identity. Yeah, it could also have been maybe a talk about metta. You know, I mean, maybe this is the greatest gift to ourselves and to the world, to kind of accept and love ourselves the way we are, with all our imperfections. But then there's something about truthfulness that is really compelling to me. So I thought I'd like to look at this in this aspect, to be real in the world, to be a genuine human being. You know, to be a real human being in this world. And then I got a bit curious about, did the Buddha have anything to say about that? Because my idea was that the Buddha would have been an authentic person. I don't know that, but that's my best guess. So I thought surely he would have had something to say about it. So I kind of thought I would like to explore the whole notion of truthfulness and authenticity and kind of look a bit in the Buddhist suttas and see if I can find something about it. So, as I said, the term truthfulness in Pali, this is satya. And some of you might know this term, which also is part of the compound Arya Satya. And Arya Satya, these are the noble truths, or this is how we usually translate them. Satya here is an adjective. It's kind of to be truthful or to be true. Also, you can also translate it as real. And maybe this is interesting to notice, Arya Satya, you know, it's not a big truth. Maybe it has more something to do with a reality or a way of exploring, investigating, and looking at something. So not a truth to be believed, but something actually to be done, maybe also to be perfected to a certain degree. So Satya, to be real, to be genuine, to be true. And the other thing, the paramis, they are translated as perfections, and usually there are 10 perfections, but if you look at that historically, depending on in which area you look and in which tradition, it could be 6 or 8 or 10. So please don't get confused by it. I give you the list of the 10 towards the end. It's not so important, but they are usually a framework of qualities that we would like complete, accomplish when we move on the path. You know, this is something on the horizon which is somewhere we want to move towards. And why did I want to do this talk? I mean, there was something I read on the internet. There was an offer of a 6-week course to become more authentic. And I kind of thought, 6 weeks, that's quite some achievement. I got really triggered by it, you know. And I didn't look further into it. It was just like, but you know, there's something with this term I really find very compelling, and there's something about it with, because it's used so much that I kind of really think, okay, do we actually know what it is? And then there is another bit that is, I will tell you towards the end, which I ended in a situation where I really was kind of wondering, what was I doing here? You know, what was really going on? And I didn't feel wrong, but somehow I couldn't quite understand what I did that felt right, but somehow wasn't that truthful, or was it? So this is also kind of which got me into this kind of being truthful, you know, being honest and being real and being a genuine human being, you know, what does that really mean? And in our world where we kind of hear that all the times, and where we have the social media and we have the internet, I mean, it is actually not so easy, I think, to really kind of stay where we are, you know, and be real, because all the time we're shown, you know, this is the perfect car, this is the perfect family, you know, this is the perfect relationship, you know. All the time we're kind of confronted with something. And I think it's a real challenge to kind of always come back to our own values and check within ourselves. You know, how does that really feel to me? And again, I mean, a lot of people are saying outside, we have a different speed. You know, there's so many inputs all the time, and it's really difficult to kind of sort through these inputs and kind of figure out our way. So there's something which is interesting, something which I find is very, very difficult. So, but this authenticity, of course, then I started to look in, you know, how do people explain it? How do they define it? And the term authenticity comes from the Greek term authentikos, which actually means to act in one's own authority. So to act in one's own authority. And here already, when I found this description, you know, there was something which I remembered from a sutta text, you know, the Buddha, just before he passed away. There was something very important. There were many important things. But one of the important things he said to his mendicants was, be a lamp unto yourself, you know, be a lamp unto yourself. So be your own refuge. And that, to me, that has you know, that feels quite similar. So obviously the Buddha did say something about kind of making yourself your own authority. And then I thought we could stop the talk here, but so another definition: to be true to your own personality, values, and spirit, regardless of the pressure that you are under to act otherwise. So to be true to your own personality, values, and spirit, regardless of the pressure that you are under to act otherwise. And then a similar definition: who you are as a person, regardless of your occupation, regardless of the influence of others, it is an honest representation of you. To be authentic means not caring what others think about you. So who you are as a person, regardless of your occupation, regardless of the influence of others, it is an honest representation of you. To be authentic means not caring what others think about you. So when I read that, I mean, this is quite a big thing, you know. This is quite a challenge, I think. And I also realized that authenticity maybe is also a bit of a privilege, you know, because there are cultures, there are countries where part of who you are cannot be shown. Yeah, maybe your sexual orientation, you know, can lead you to go to prison in some countries. So actually to be really able to express who you are in any situation is actually quite a privilege, and I really would like to acknowledge that, you know, to all of us here. You know, it's a privilege actually to be able to work on your own inner values, on your what is important to you, what you feel, what you sense, and be able and allowed to express this freely. And there's also something which I think is what some people think about authenticity. It's in one book, it's called the authenticity trap. And that is that you at all times more or less express what you are feeling or what is going on inside you. So if you had enough by now, you would stand up, take your cup of tea and kind of say, you know, that's it. And obviously, I don't think anybody of us would really consider this to be an authentic person, you know, but there can be the misunderstanding that you kind of have to express what's going on inside you all the time. But I don't think that doesn't really fit with me. You know, usually when we meet people that are really genuine, authentic, you know, we really feel that we can trust, and we also really feel seen, and they give space to others, and they have an understanding of the situation. So then, I went further to investigate, and I found a book about authenticity. It is written by a psychologist, and his name is Stephen Joseph. And he's very much interested in human flourishing and in positive psychology. So he has made some research. And what he kind of found is that to be a really authentic person, it takes three steps. The first one is to know yourself. The second one is to own yourself. And the third one is to be yourself. So in a sense, to live your life according to the other two. So to know yourself, to own yourself, to be yourself. And then I was kind of thinking, okay, I'll try and go to the suttas and see if they have to say anything about these three steps. And I didn't really know what to find. So it was a bit of a challenge because the sutta material is not very thin. But, but I was very lucky. And by some of it, I was very moved, actually. So what does it mean to know yourself? So in the book, it is described to know yourself. And I'm sure I want to say there are probably loads of other books about authenticity. But I found it was quite useful. And it made me easy understand, you know, what he was going on about. So to know yourself, to know what is going on inside you in terms of sensations, emotions, and thoughts. Know your likes and dislikes. Know what you're good at and what you're not good at. Know what you are prepared to do and what you are not prepared to do. And it was a bit of a conundrum for me, and I thought, oh my God, well, I'm going to find something about that. And then, of course, I had this very big epiphany, you know, and I knew precisely where to go, and I didn't have to lead, you know, but it was really funny that I had to think about it. So here we go. Does one live contemplating the body in the body internally, or one lives contemplating the body in the body externally? Or one lives contemplating the body in the body internally and externally? One lives contemplating arising in the body, or one lives contemplating passing away in the body? Or one lives contemplating arising and passing away in the body? Or one's mindfulness is established with the notion the body exists. So this is if you haven't recognized it, this is part of the Satipatthana Sutta. This is what we have been practicing for the last couple of days and what we're going to practice until the final day. So in a sense, if you're on your path of satipatthana, of mindfulness, of practicing, you also, it seems to me, on a way to become a more genuine, more real, more authentic person. And it's not about the sensations, the body, we know it's about the hindrances. Herein, practitioners, when sense desire is present, a practitioner knows there is sense desire. When ill will is present, a practitioner knows ill will is present. When laziness and lethargy are present, one knows there are laziness and lethargy present in me. And I think most of you have reported over the last couple of days lethargy or restlessness or whatever your preference of hindrance is. So you're doing very, very well, I think. Then there was something about likes and dislikes. And I think just about yesterday, we were practicing the Vedana, the feeling tone. So what is pleasant, what is unpleasant, what is neither nor. So even here, you know, we're actually doing a really good job. So I'd like to move on now to the next step, to own yourself. And I mean, this is actually, to a certain degree, it's quite a big step. It's one thing to know what is happening inside me. It's another thing to actually allow myself and recognize and accept that this is happening. And I know we're all struggling a little bit with that. You know, can we be kind with that? Are we struggling with it? Yes. And then the next step within that is actually then to own up to others. You know, when I do something, when I feel something, when I sense something, you know, to actually really let the other person know or somebody else is not necessarily an easy thing. So, but what does Stephen Joseph say about to own yourself? So people who are authentic, they don't allow themselves to be bullied into thinking, saying or doing something they do not agree with. So they don't allow themselves to be bullied into thinking, saying or doing something they do not agree with. And they take responsibility for their decisions and actions. So anytime you come up to a group interview and you report what you're experiencing, you're actually owning up to yourself and to others. So that is really lovely, and I'm always kind of very appreciative of the way people speak and people are kind and people listen to each other. And I think it's a really good environment, because I think the one thing about owning up is also where can we do that safely. And it seems that we here seem to be able to create a really safe space to be able to do that. And that really opens up to be really honest about what is happening within us. However, that isn't always so. Maybe some people of you know that there have been lots of psychological experiments, but one of them, which is called Asher's experiment. In this experiment, there is one person who is not part of the group. There's a group, and one person is obviously the trial rabbit. And what they did is kind of they were putting projecting lines on the wall. And from the lines in the beginning, you know, there was always one line that was shorter or longer or something. And they always had to agree on all of them together, you know, which line was the short or the long one. And then the last picture, all three lines were the same length. Yeah, all three lines were the same length. But then one person started to say that one of the lines was longer than the others. And all of the people participating in the experiment were saying the same. You know, there's one line that is longer than the other lines. And then there was this poor person left behind, kind of struggling, you know, with their perception. And I mean, it's really interesting what happens with perception. We've been talking about that as well and hearing about it. And 86% of people, you know, went with the group. You know, 86% of people agreed on, yeah, there was one line that was longer than the others. But what isn't really maybe said so often is that 24%, and that's at least a quarter of the people, they kind of state with what they experience to be true. And as it seems it, that these were quite authentic people, and they were also quite convinced that they were right. So they weren't unsure, they knew, and they were sticking to the truth. So you know there's a lot of people that can be pushed, but actually there is a quite high amount of people that will stick to what they experience and what they sense and feel is right for them. I think that's quite some achievement. So, in the Buddhist text, I found something which I really found very moving. There is a sutta, it's quite a long sutta, and the passage is just the beginning, actually, and the topic continues, then goes over to something differently. But this is, the discourse is called The Lesser Mass of Stress. And it's a conversation between Mahanama, who is a layperson and a cousin of the Buddha, and a practicing Buddhist. And the Buddha. So I'm going to read this passage. Then Mahanama the Shakyan went to the Blessed One and on arrival, having bowed down to him, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "For a long time now I have understood the Dhamma taught by the Buddha. Greed is a defilement of the mind. Aversion is a defilement of the mind. Delusion is a defilement of the mind. Yet even though I understand that greed is a defilement of the mind, aversion is a defilement of the mind, delusion is a defilement of the mind, there are still times when the mental quality of greed invades my mind and remains. When the mental quality of aversion, when the mental quality of delusion invades my mind and remains." So here Mahanama is very honest. He says, "I know what you're teaching. I understand it cognitively. However, I'm still experiencing lust. I'm still experiencing anger. And I still have moments where I really don't quite know what to do and what is happening." So he's just really owning up to himself and really owning up to the Buddha. And then the Buddha answers, "I myself, before my awakening, when I was still an unawakened bodhisattva, saw as it actually was with right discernment that sensuality is of much stress, much despair, and greater drawbacks. But as long as I had not attained a rapture, apart from sensuality, apart from unskillful mental qualities or something more peaceful than that, I did not claim that I could not be tempted by sensuality." I find it quite moving because quite often when the Buddha is asked something, he kind of gives advice. But here he's actually doing something which is very, very, very beautiful. He's actually saying, "I know precisely what you're talking about. I know what it feels. I have been there and I have moved on." I find it enormously moving and encouraging, and it's a real meeting between two very genuine people being really honest about what is going on and what is happening. So how about my own life? Time is going on. I remember on one time when I was on retreat, and I was kind of, it's like here, there's a washing up queue. And I was walking to the queue quite mindfully, I was practicing quite okay, and I wanted to queue up. And from the side, there was a person moving in very fast, and I was trying to do a step backward, and it was one of my teachers, and she obviously had been to a meeting, did not teach on the retreat. So obviously teacher meeting, and I was stepping backward. And she kind of said, no. So, okay. So I was taking my place. And then she was standing behind me. And it was very interesting because here I was standing with my practice and it was kind of, okay, what do I want to do? Because I could see she was a bit in a rush. Do I move faster? Do I move more slowly because I want to be a good practitioner? Or what do I want to do? Never in my whole life have I felt so much on my toes in that situation when I was practicing. In the end, I did as I had planned. But it was also a really, really good lesson in actually sometimes when you want to practice, you want to kind of practice as if your teacher is standing behind you. So moving on to the last bit, which I think in a sense is a consequence. You know, when you start to know what is happening inside you and you also start to disclose yourself to friends or in circles where you kind of feel safe, you know, you become also, it becomes more and more easy to actually live your life according to what your values are. So as Stephen Joseph puts it, so to be yourself, an authentic person, an inclination towards openness and transparency with others. So an inclination towards openness and transparency with others. With authenticity comes integrity. I live my life according to my values. And that was the biggest relief for me, knowing when the most authentic act is to stay silent or to walk away. Yeah. Knowing when the most authentic act is to stay silent or to walk away. Because what happened to me and what started, in a sense, this whole exploration of authenticity and truthfulness is I was visiting my parents. They live in Austria, I live in Denmark. And sometimes my mother can be a bit difficult. And there she really had a hard time because aging is not very funny. She's 84, my father 89. And she was just really, really being very, very tough and bitter all the time, you know. And it really started getting to me. And then we were sitting in this very lovely restaurant at the lakeside. And then she again said something which was actually quite hurtful. And we were sitting on the bench and I looked at my father and I said, could you please get up? And then I was walking outside of the restaurant into the fresh air. I was taking a couple of breaths. And then I was going back inside. And then we continued with our lunch. And that was it. But I had a very funny feeling, you know, should I have said something? You know, what was I doing? And I was such a relief when I actually read this line, you know, knowing when to walk away. Because really, I did not want to argue. There was no point. I mean, I've tried it many times before. It just causes more pain. So really, in my sense, I was being truthful to my value. But it took me a really, really long time to figure that one out, yeah, because I really wasn't quite sure if what I was doing, you know, was I honest or was I pretending? But I felt okay, you know. The feeling inside myself was an okayness, you know, that was okay what I did. And this is what the whole exploration, as I said, started. So, what does the Buddha say about living an authentic way? So, actually, he says something about it in many, many suttas. I'm just going to use this very short one. And I mean, all the sutta references I will put up on the board later on. This is something about being kind, mendicants being kind to each other. And there he kind of says, firstly, a mendicant consistently treats their spiritual companions with bodily kindness, both in public and in private. Or another translation, both to their faces and behind their back. So what he really is saying, you know, you do the way you do all the time, you know. It doesn't matter if somebody is looking. It doesn't matter if nobody hears you, sees you. You act according to what your intention is. And you be honest about it. What I also want to say is, you know, there are now many books, and obviously I have spoken about a course about being authentic, but what I realized when I also wrote this this talk is kind of that the paramis or the Buddhist path, you know, and obviously through the text, you know, we are really on the path to being genuine, you know, real, honest people. And also the paramis, they usually don't come alone. They usually come in a package of six, eight, or ten, which kind of then offers some other qualities. You know, some of the other paramis, these perfections are, for example, kindness or virtue or patience, which we, I think, would usually want to see in an authentic person. So we're really, really on a good path, I think. So I would like to end this talk with two quotes, one from Maya Angelou and one from Nietzsche. So Maya Angelou, she says, "My mission in life is not merely to survive, but to thrive and to do so with some passion, some compassion, some humor, and some style." And Nietzsche says, "Authentic existence is when you are in touch with your own nature. At the bottom, every person knows well enough that she is a unique being, only once on this earth, and by no extraordinary chance will such a marvelously picturesque piece of diversity, in unity as she is, ever be put together a second time." Thank you very much. So let's just stay silent for a short moment.